Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is brought to you by the supporters of patreon.com/DanLeSac. And if you enjoy this podcast, you should consider becoming a supporter of patreon.com/DanLeSac. This will not be the last time you hear the word patreon.com/DanLeSac in this podcast. Enjoy. Hello, hello. Welcome to episode 23. Of Falling Forward with Dan LeSac. Are we there? I think it's 23. I'm recording this standing up today, so people walking past on the street below can see me just standing there. I think they think I'm a radio station. Like that weird TV station in Broad Street Mall in Reading. If you're ever there, go up to the second floor, wander towards the car park, and you'll see a TV channel called That's TV, and it's just two people sat around a table. I don't know if it's a real thing, but it says TV. They've got a Freeview channel number, so they must be. It must be legit. What was the question? Oh, yes. This week's guest is Nathan Fake, electronic music producer, pioneer. Just a hugely talented musician. Someone I've not spoken to in maybe a decade. I don't know. We were both in Reading at the same time. Around the college years, and kind of knew each other through others, like Digger, and those two that worked in the Iguana when the Iguana was still here, the cafe part, not the club part. I can't remember their names. I think they got married. You don't know who any of these people are, but that's fine, nor do I anymore. But yes, I took a drive to Norfolk, to the Norwich, and we had a lovely afternoon. We chatted, we drank coffee, then we stopped recording, and then we chatted some more, but stuff we can't really say on the record, you know, about certain DJs' riders, or which DJs committed the most murders. You'd be surprised which one it is. They're very committed to their murdering. But yeah, we got to dig deep into his career. Obviously, he did his first release while he was still at college, like had vinyl in his hands while still studying, which is always mind-blowing to me. I didn't see vinyl of my own work until I was like 27, 28 or something. But yeah, going through that, through Drowning in a Sea of Love, Hard Island, Steam Days, and up to the most recent LP, which is Providence, which came out on Ninja Tune. You should Google that. You should Google all the albums and listen to them. Maybe purchase them and put them on your preferred device, like a Zune, and walk around town having a little listen. Thank you again, Nathan, for letting me come to your house and invade your privacy. But I'll do the plugs, and then you can listen to it, yeah? That sound good? So I've already plugged Patreon at the start of the show, patreon.com/DanLeSac. So I don't need to plug Patreon again. Patreon. Music this week is actually not on my Bandcamp. Usually I would point you to danlesac.bandcamp.com and tell you the music's there, but it's not there this week because it's something it's a demo, it's a rough idea, it's a thing I'm working on. If you want to hear it without me talking over it, hit me up on Twitter and I'll hook you up. And it will be on Bandcamp in the future. I just don't know when yet. And don't forget, if you can, subscribe to the podcast if you can, review the podcast if you can, just do all those things that every podcaster tells you to do. That would be greatly appreciated. And don't forget danisgreat.co.uk for all your merchandise needs, and 20% off with the old Dan is Great code at checkout. So yeah, that's the plugs. Oh, I nearly forgot to plug this. Go to Scroobius Pipio, his Twitter. Go to his Twitter and find the post about Kill Ben Lick, which is the new movie. The new movie he's in. They're doing a sort of, I don't know how to explain it, kind of crowdfunded screenings at Vue cinemas around the country. And they have to sell a certain amount of tickets before the screening is confirmed. So go find that post. Go find the cinema in your area and go support Scroobius Pip. If I'd remembered to do that in advance, I might have written down a better way of explaining all that. But anyway, back to whatever I was either plugging or talking about before. Woohoo! I really don't like doing any of that bit. That bit's the worst bit of the podcast. I wish I didn't have to do that bit. But if I don't do that bit, you lot don't do the bit that pays for my electricity and batteries. I get through a lot of batteries for this podcast. I'm going to buy some recycled ones. But you don't need to know that. That's not important to you. That's not important information for you. So I'll get out of the way and enjoy the chat with Nathan Fake and me, Dan Lesak. I don't know if you know who I am. Do you know me?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
We've been talking, and there's no difference now. We haven't changed. Yeah. I'm not about to go, hey, well, it's you. You join me here in sunny Norwich with Nathan Fake of Nathan Fake fame.
I also do this thing where I keep having to look at it, the recording, not my penis, just over and over again.
Is it still working? Is it?
You could still be talking about your penis now.
Yeah. Is this working? Is this on?
Is it working?
It is, yeah. That's the worst when a girl taps it. 1, 2.
There's no girls here, don't worry.
Not yet, it's only so. We've only just had that coffee. Let's get loose.
Wee!
Hi, darling. How are you doing? Fine. Oh, good. Glad you're doing well.
Yeah, there's loads of girls here now.
They've all tapped up. Keep it down! Do you remember Sean's show?
Don't think I do, you know.
I can't remember. He's Irish comedian, and he had a show.
Sean Hughes?
Yeah. Yeah, so he had like a sort of sitcom-y thing.
Oh, right.
And every time his phone rang, before he picked it up, he'd turn up jazz music. So when he answered, he was like, hi, yeah, sorry, let me turn down the jazz. Yeah, just turn down. Hey, guys, can you keep it down? I'm just turning down the jazz.
Like you live in Dalston or something.
Yeah. I think this is pre.
Yeah, it must be.
I'm old. I'm 40. I'm allowed.
I'm catching you up.
It's going to mix it. What, is it a different time continuum, Dan?
Yeah, yeah.
It moves ever so slightly
you're
faster.
You're getting younger now.
Oh, nightmare. Yeah. I don't want to get younger. Don't let me lose all my memories. That's all I want. How old are you?
I'm 36.
36, so 4 years.
Yeah, you're the same age as my brother.
So,
four, you know,
your first release was 2003.
Yeah, it was.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
When you were at college.
Yeah, yeah.
How was that?
It was really weird, actually. I remember, it's quite weird how it happened. It started happening, the whole, thing with me getting a record released and whatever, while I was still back in Norfolk, before I'd moved to Reading to go to college and stuff. By the time it came out, I was in Reading. So, which is kind of nice because it was sort of near London and stuff. I felt like I was more in.
Yeah.
It felt like I was,
part of doing
business because I was closer to London or something. But yeah.
Because we had mobile phones in Reading. We had all indoor electricity. You keep your electricity outside in Norwich.
Yeah, yeah. We're having it pumped in.
But that must have been pretty rad to be able to, because you were doing music tech.
Yeah.
And to have hey, this is my music tech on vinyl.
Yeah, it's a bit weird. I didn't finish that course. I got into the second year, and then that by the time that I was there, I sort of my music career kind of started.
Yeah.
But I stayed in Reading for a couple of years after that.
Yeah, because you had Watlington Street EP the next year.
Yeah, and I think by the time I released that, I wasn't living at Watlington Street anymore. But yeah, that was where I lived in my first year.
So I think I get confused. I think by the time you released that, my friend Jake had moved to Watlington Street.
Oh, really?
maybe two doors down from where you used to live.
It's a tiny little street, yeah.
It's a tiny street. And it was always weird to me, because I was working in HMV, so that record would be on the shelf. And it's why did you name it after this? You could have gone to Radstock Road, Addington. There's loads of good roads in
Reading. I basically made it living there. That's why I called it that.
Yeah.
So, that EP was, all stuff that was... Well, that it came out just after my first record, but I'd made all those tunes around the same time.
Mm.
So, yeah. But it was, Outhouse, my first record. I sort of, started that in Norfolk and finished it in Reading, and then it got released, and then the Watlington Street EP was all stuff I made in Reading, which I've just re-released that, actually.
You did?
Yeah. Digitally, but yeah, because it was 2004 that came out. But yeah,
do you feel old? That's 15 years, isn't it?
It's
that's a child. That's a child who physically could get another child pregnant at this point.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Your EP could be out there impregnating people right now, and you wouldn't even know it. You put it on the internet; it can get anywhere now.
It's weird, because we're talking about Reading now, right? The memories of that place, because I haven't been there for so long. It must be over 10 years since I've actually been to Reading, more than that. So, the memories are still super fresh of what Reading is like.
Yeah.
So, I don't feel old. But then when I think about who I was back then, I was 21 or... Which is just that I was literally a child. I mean, you still are a child when you're 21, aren't you? Really?
Yeah, There's a bit of your brain that doesn't finish, doesn't set until you're 25.
Yeah.
And that's, I can't remember what bit it is, but it's to do with decision making and reasoning and stuff. So, yeah, you're definitely not an adult.
Yeah, you don't really sort of know yourself at that age, do you? I feel like now I'm I totally know myself really well now. But yeah, so when I think back to who I was when that record or those records came out, it does feel super long ago. But
I can if I do dumb shit now, if I the way I talk to people, so sometimes I'll snap at someone. But now I understand why that happened. Back then, I would say something really offensive to someone, and I would not know why I'd say it.
Same.
Just
I think I could be. Yeah, when I was younger, I feel like in hindsight, I could say quite tactless stuff quite a lot of the time, but people do, don't they? But I feel like I've...
You're being edgy.
Yeah.
Techno goth.
In a really cringe way.
But you had a bit of a head start on some ice. You know, you got to start before you had to walk into the world and get a real job sort of stuff.
Kind of. I did have like
you a couple had jobs,
of,
yeah.
A couple of like random jobs here, like yeah, in Norfolk, yeah. I worked on a farm. How much more stereotypical you can get.
I worked on a chicken farm for a bit, so we've got that in common.
Yeah.
Chickens are the smaller ones. Cows are the big ones. The cows are the ones you can ride. Well, you can ride two chickens, but they need a lot of training.
Strap them to your feet.
A lot, yeah.
Get them to carry you about. Yeah.
I don't think they do it willingly, but they're chickens, so it's fine.
All for long.
Long at all. Not now, not at my age. I'm heavy. Okay, so you got to that head start, and then as you were doing your first album, what, 2006?
Well, I made the album about 2004.
You made it 2004, but it didn't come out.
Okay, mate, because it was like the label, Border Community, it was like the first album they did. So, and I think,
oh, really?
And yeah, that was like...
I didn't realise it was BC, the first CD album.
CD01, yeah, it was like the first album they ever released.
Nice.
And so it took a while for it to all sort of happen, really, because, yeah, we had a, I think, I say we, I mean, I didn't have any involvement in running the label, but Border Community kind of like, you know, were kind of finding their feet with how to put out an album, maybe, I don't know.
Yeah.
It was fine, it was no problem at all, but
this thing, like putting out an LP, a like vinyl EP, is you make 1,000 or you make 500, then probably 500 or 1,000, and then you sell them. That was it, you know, it was like email a few DJs, send it out to a few mags.
Because the album, we were doing it on CD, which the label hadn't done before.
Yeah,
so there was a whole bunch of stuff. And all that, you know, album artwork, which is a lot more extensive than a single and, you know, mastering. So, yeah, it was like, it took a while for it to come out for that reason, really. It was all good, you know, it was quite nice to sort of have a little gap.
But you, in that time as well, you got the Motorola advert.
That was the track from that album.
Was it Grandfathered?
I think it was, yeah.
I always thought it was a T-Mobile ad until when I was looking yesterday. I
totally forgot about that, yeah.
But that, again, is like another kind of bit chunk of freedom right at the start. Do you feel like you had a little less stress going in?
I think so. I mean, like I said, because I was so young, and it's funny, like, so back in like 2003, to have someone who was like, I mean, I was 20, I think, when my record came out, my first one. Having someone that young, and I started doing gigs straight away pretty much as well, it was quite weird to be that young. Because when I was sort of like doing gigs sort of around Europe, I mostly played in like sort of Holland and Germany around that time. Most sort of, you know, the other DJs or whatever sort of like were like 10 plus years older than me. So
yeah.
I was like, oh, you're so young. Blah, blah, blah.
And,
like, yeah.
And like a lot of grams of cocaine older as well. Like, they've physically aged. They're like nice mahogany varnished skin, you know.
It's very naive to all that at that point. But now it's like super normal, I think, for like new artists to be young.
And yeah, no, definitely.
Nowadays, you know, you get like teenagers. Well, I mean, things like James Holden, he was like 17 or something when his first record came out. But that, he was like a total rarity, you know, that wasn't normal.
Yeah, not
at all. But it's really normal now, I think, yeah.
Well, I think now as well, because of the way the internet works as well.
Yeah, the tools are like much easily available. And basically, you just, I'm not saying like people aren't as talented, but you can just sort of look up how to make music on the internet, basically.
Oh, mate, like there are
tutorials. So it is, I mean, which is good because it could just give people a push and then they'll get their own.
I think I've learned more about like music theory, actual music theory in the last year than I've ever learned before, because I like someone asked me to do a thing in a certain style and I was like I just press the buttons and the noises happen, you know, until I find the noises that I like. So, and it was like, okay, well, I need to know like what's the chord structure they use and all that, and it was like, all right, this music theory thing's really easy.
Well, it's the thing with music theory, like, because I grew up, so when I kind of like, you know, was like discovering music or discovering playing music or making it, I always played the keyboard, but I didn't know the names for all these things. But when I started learning about music theory at college, I was like, oh, that's what that thing's called. You know, that's that thing I've already kind of like been doing. But yeah, so that's useful to put a name to stuff that you
that's something
quite... But like, other than that, it's a bit of a jungle.
I realised the other day that there's one of the B flat scales, B flat minor or something, that I use all the time. But I didn't know I used that. I just knew these keys work together in these combinations.
It's a good key, B flat.
It's got most of the black ones in the middle. All the black notes in there.
It's a nice sort of baseline key because it's sort of not, it's like a nice sort of like middly sort of punchy kind of note rather than too subby so it gets lost in stuff.
This thing that I was trying to explain to someone not too long ago, that part of why certain genres sound certain ways is not just the notes. It's the decision that, like you say, like certain scales sit just in the right spot for bass to feel nice, you know. Like certain scales are harder to play on guitar, so you're less likely to play them on guitar.
It's like on keyboards, like C major and A minor are just all white notes. So you can just do like crazy, and it'll sound good.
Exactly.
You can just
like they're all going to fit, they're all going to work. Mash your hands
on the keyboard and...
But yeah, it's like weird how the, in a sense, the technology that can create entire genres.
Yeah, totally. That's what electronic music is, isn't it? But it's the technology that created, I mean, if people using the technology in the way that it wasn't supposed to be used, basically, wasn't it? That's kind of how electronic music got
in its modern
sense anyway.
Obviously, you've never been known to be like a big gearhead kind of kit owning guy.
Yeah.
How do you feel about like the way people are gravitating towards like modular now and spending huge amounts of money to make one note play at a time?
Well, it's funny. I mean, yeah, because I always, my first sort of two or three albums, maybe three or four albums, was sort of basically all computer bar like a couple of sort of cassette recording techniques. But like
soften those edges, Nathan. Soften those edges.
Totally. Well, because that sort of early mid-2000s, it was like, I think that very digital sort of laptop-y kind of like IDM type.
Like all the rage. We can make that weird form and...
Yeah, so that kind of like late 90s, early 2000s was like very much like, oh yeah, you know, just a laptop and that's it. You know, that was like cool. And then now it's obviously gone back to hardware because I think the technology has sort of merged with, you know, the old vintage analog stuff and with the modern digital. So it's like kind of like a optimized version of I think that and it's more fun. It's like, you know, it's sort of right there, a box that you can touch or a keyboard that you can touch. I think the thing with modular, it's like I've never got into the whole modular thing, but like I totally get it. I mean, I think it's probably quite addictive and a lot of fun, but like it's, for me, it's kind of like I'm really crap at sort of tech stuff. I make electronic music, which is obviously a technical thing, but like I know how to like make music, but I wouldn't know how to like use all kinds of gear. Stuff like modular seems like really interesting if you're into like engineering, or if you know, I sort of know the basics of how like a synthesizer works, but like if you sort of know exactly how all that stuff works, you want to just put together your own version of it, then modular is amazing. I just don't have any desire to do that. I quite enjoy just sort of using quite crap instruments and just kind of trying to squeeze credible stuff out of them.
But do you find that limitation helps?
Yeah, like, totally. That's why I've always...
you have to push further into it.
Well, it's funny. So my first album, that Drowning in a Sea of Love that I recorded in Reading, that was like, I had like, for a lot of the sounds, I had like this sort of toy Casio keyboard I had since I was a kid. And that's like, when you sort of decontextualize those sort of sounds, people just think it's a synth, because they essentially are synths.
Because they can't see it, I've got a Casio VL tone, which is about, I don't know, like 30 centimeters long, not even that. It's got a calculator in it. And if you save a number to the calculator, when you go back to play the synth, it's synth. That's how you made it change parameters. You couldn't change many. You could change release. I remember that because I'd always put that to 99. But like, yeah, it was just a really simple thing. But those things were having to make sounds in the way that the big things were. It's just you didn't have all.
Yeah, it was just like a small box. It was a toy. But it was still like FM synthesis or like PCM, whatever, you know, whatever Casio used. So
PCM, I think.
Yeah, that was the Casio. FM was the Yamaha one, wasn't it? Because
I get confused. Yeah, now since
all the sort of Yamaha PSR whatever keyboards, their sounds are like really FM-y, like, you know, you can tell it's all.
Yeah.
And the Casio ones are a bit more sort of rigid or something. They sort of didn't sound quite so like alive and synthy as Yamaha ones did. But anyway, yeah, I used a whole bunch of those, like, yeah, just like the sort of string sound, which is just this weird kind of, it's quite a nice sound, but, you know, I remember when, as a kid, sort of scrolling through all the sounds, oh, it doesn't sound like an oboe, does it? You know, but it's like,
yeah.
Obviously, yeah. But like, if it's just like a sort of disembodied, like, tone, then it's like, oh, that's a nice synth sound or something.
Yeah.
So that was what I quite liked.
I always liked it how none of them ever sounded like what they were meant to.
The pianos were, like, not bad.
Every now and again, you get a guitar, like a distorted guitar that would sound like it, but it would be like really short.
It would be good if you just played one note, because it was like, and then like when you sort of played notes in quick succession, it would just sort of sound really like, because it's just a sample that's been
picked
through. So it's like, it would just sound ridiculous. Yeah.
For you listening, like that weird pitching, you can hear it in The Fifth Element when the opera singer sings.
Oh yeah.
Because it's literally a MIDI keyboard.
Okay. Sound, yeah.
Of like her, yeah, like.
That's all the rage, that stuff now, isn't it? I think people, it's quite sort of kitsch, isn't it?
They love it.
Yeah.
But they do it really well in the movie, but every now and again you're just like, yep, he pitch bend that. He was definitely on the woo woo.
Super
90s.
Yeah. Because in the 90s it was sort of like attempting to be cutting edge, wasn't it? Whereas now it's like a sort of kitsch. Oh, it weren't the 90s, a funny time, like with all these crap synth sounds, and yeah, people sort of use those on purpose. Well, I mean, I've done it myself. Like, I've used these sort of Korg Prophecy
that's what you used on Providence, which
is
2017, and you're using the most overly like complex monosynth on the planet.
Ridiculous synth, really poorly designed.
So I was trying to, obviously not everyone who listens to this is music, so I was trying to think of an analogy for what a Korg Prophecy is. And like, it's really hard because like a synthesizer, you just play a note and you can twiddle knobs, but it's
the sort of epitome of like 90s technology being quite advanced but just not quite there yet.
I feel like they wanted to write bigger numbers than somebody else, so instead of saying one LFO, an LFO is like a child on controlling a dimmer switch in your living room. Instead of saying one LFO, they were like, "I know, we'll have four LFOs." Yeah. And it's like, okay, cool. But
the thing with the Prophecy, like, the fact it's a monosynth is really strange, because the sort of sounds you can get out of it, it feels like it should be a polysynth.
Yeah.
Because it
monosynth, one note, polysynth, multiple notes at a time.
It's a monosynth, so it's just very awkwardly limited. Like, you just feel like you can't do enough with it. But I ended up just making loads of tunes with it. That's why I used it.
I remember the advert for it.
Oh, right.
Like Computer Music or someone, when it came with a VHS.
Wow. Nice.
Back then.
I'd like to watch that.
Yeah. But I remember it, and it was like, they never mentioned any, they just keep saying the word lead synth. It's a lead
synth. Yeah, it's almost like they somehow like messed it up and couldn't make it a polysynth. So, oh, let's just spin that into something positive. It's a monosynth, guys. It's going to blow your minds.
It's massive. Yeah. Like 300 keys. Yeah. It's like, yes, but one note.
I do remember, it was like really well marketed, because I do remember when it came out as well. I think I remember just seeing in like, you know, music gear catalogues at the time, it was like 96 or 97 it came out.
I love 90s gear.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you, I'm going to show you a photo I took in Norwich earlier at Cash Converters.
Oh, nice.
Of something called a Quasi-MIDI Revolution 309.
I've seen that.
I was just like, whoa, look at that, Quasi-MIDI. They had cool stuff. They had a thing called a Technox. But everything they made was like,
was it Sirius as well? That was one of
maybe.
The
six. Yeah, one of my but they were like properly, we rave.
Yeah,
we're rave, the rave Revolution 309.
But I remember seeing like the Prophecy, it cost like a grand when it came out, which was like so much money.
It's still like 200-300 quid now.
Yeah, I got it for like 200 quid. But like, they had like, there's like Liam Howlett from The Prodigies bigging it up. There's photos of him using it. And you can hear it. On a bunch of Prodigy tunes. Now that I know, like on Firestarter, like the sort of the kind of like break bit where there's this kind of that sound is just like preset number one when you turn the synth on. That's just like preset zero, and you press down the key and it goes. It's like, fuck, that's Firestarter.
I love stuff like that. Do you remember that? Do you really like it? Is it wicked?
Yeah.
That's like the demo on a.
Oh yes, I've heard about that. Yeah.
Like Equisonics keyboard or something. One of those like non-synthy brands. So it's just like just the demo, mate. It's fine. Just rap over that. It'll be great. Number one.
Boom. I suppose it's like sampling, but copyright free, isn't it?
Yeah, it's
fine. If it's a demo, there's nothing wrong with that, really, is
it? I had an Electribe for years, and there was one of the preset patches in there. I was just a really nice chord structure and stuff, and I remember taking the MIDI of it, and it's just sat there in Ableton now for like 10 years, where I'm like, I'm going to find a use for this at some point in my life. But
there was some techno tune or something, maybe from like 10 years ago, that was, it was one of the Reactor presets.
Mm.
Just with a beat under it, like the heart that it
was, just the whole song.
Yeah, it was like this sort of synth, like an arp, like the whole. It was like a sort of 4-bar, you know, tune, like loop, which was just a preset thing in Reactor. And
I do dig it though. It does.
It's
like,
fine. I think it's fine to do it, that.
Like,
I don't do that myself, and it would seem weird. It would seem like a sort of a laugh to do that. Oh, I'll make a tune out of that demo.
Yeah.
But I'm sure those things probably start off as a laugh, but then it's like, oh, actually, this is like pretty good.
We've done well, lads. Damn it.
Yeah, like,
okay. Liam was in there. Yeah, I'll just whack this bit in. No one will know.
Oh, yeah, it's an up all night programming that sound.
Oh, yeah, it's been ages. I did it before though, like, because I often use a preset sound as a launching point. If I need a bass, I'll get the bass section. And
kind of had to with the Prophecy because it's so hard to program.
Yeah. Right?
Like, just sort of taking apart presets.
But I've done it before and then not saved what I've done.
Yeah.
Come back the next day and like, oh, that bass is nice. Oh, it's really tight. It's not really me. And then it's like, oh, it's the preset still. Fuck. Yeah. Can't use it. Somebody else can use it. It's something I like about, like, it is how you use it. Like, painters aren't running around being pissy that, like, Dave's using titanium white. Titanium white's my sound, my colour, mate, you know.
Blue.
Like, yeah, they'll have their preference of paints and stuff, but everyone's going to have to use the same thing eventually.
Yeah, it's like if you're a guitarist, it's like, it doesn't mean you're bogus if you didn't make the guitar yourself.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. You can buy kits now.
Yeah, but does that make a better guitar than one that's professionally made by, like, experts?
That lad from Queen, his guitar was made out of a toilet seat. His dad made him that.
That's crazy.
His dad was good at guitars, apparently. Or maybe guitars are easy.
Yeah.
There you go, guitarists.
Yeah.
I did realise that technology was catching up with me the other day when I got a guitar pedal and it had a USB port. And I was like, why has it got a USB port? And it's like, oh, you can update a guitar pedal. It's like,
that's weird.
Wait, your firmware. This is a guitar pedal, guys. But it's the future now. We're in the future.
Everything's online.
I find that stuff interesting. Like, the amount of things that require you to be online to use them.
Yeah. Yeah, any
pretty,
like,
frustrating.
I mean, it's quite cool having like synths now just have like a USB port on them rather than MIDI. Well, you also have MIDI ports, but you can
Most
of it's just USB and it's all done, you know, rather than messing about with MIDI cables. But yeah, it is strange, like, it's just like there's nothing is like off the grid, you know, everything's like on this ominously sort of connected and linked and somehow gets back to like Mark Zuckerberg or something.
Zuckerberg sitting there, like, going, oh, Nathan Wake's using that preset,
like,
again.
Spying on you through your Korg mini log.
Oh, using the Aphex Twin presets. Oh, that's the monologue. Those presets are really nice. It's not meant that we don't, I don't often talk tech on here, but they are nice. For you, like, obviously, the first album, we're just going to loop straight back.
Yeah.
First album, like, the EPs, Watling Street EP particularly, is quite tough.
Yeah.
And then the album softens up, becomes more albumy. Less about selling 12 inches, more about,
Totally,
you can sit down and listen. but you get tougher again.
Yeah.
Hard irons. Is that the live thing doing that?
I think, yeah, with the way it went from like, you know, pre the first album, because they were just sort of like techno 12 inches.
But they're then, like quite straight up as
yeah,
well. Yeah.
And then before the album came out, there was the Sky Was Pink single, which were the original was on the album. And that was kind of like the album was more that kind of like kind of shoegazy kind of pretend live drum sort of thing. And obviously that had James's remix on it, which was like the club hit.
Mm.
And then
you get booked because of the club hit.
Basically, yeah. I thought I was getting booked because people were interested in my album, but it was just because of James's remix. But yeah.
Somebody else's work.
I didn't get where I am today by not getting those gigs. But yeah. But like, I toured the album. So my live set before the album was obviously just like a club set, mostly sort of techno. Mm. And then the album came out and it was like the live thing, like with Vincent Oliver,
yeah.
The visuals and stuff, which was like this sort of AV thing, very not a club thing. And there were quite a few, I mean, that tour generally went really well, you know, it was a dream really. I mean, looking back at it, we were sort of quite ahead of our time with, I mean, Vincent was with his visuals and the sort of technical side of it, because it was quite rare doing AV shows back then. But then there were a few instances on that tour where it was just a club and like they booked me to play in a club. Me and Vincent would turn up and it is literally just like, oh yeah, you're at 3 a.m. and there's like a techno DJ before me and
yeah.
I had to go on and play my sort of pleasant, like twinkly shoegaze. Yeah, there were like noisy bits, but because there's like, because there was 0-4-4 kicks in it.
Yeah, none.
That just, some people would, that would either like, well yeah, it would just be like shit for a lot of people because it was, oh, there's no drums in it.
Yeah.
Or no techno drums.
Sorry, Nathan, I've just taken my drugs. And
yeah.
Is this how it's going to go for the next hour?
It's funny how that like the 4-4 kick drum is so polarizing because it either like, either it's completely like switches people off or people don't want anything but that.
Yeah. Know,
it's such a weird thing. So yeah, in a club environment, is you're in an environment where people just want 4-4 kick drums. So, and then Hard Islands following that came out of just me sort of thinking, oh, I sort of missed playing in clubs, you know, I sort of missed doing like quite a sort of banging live set because my one previous to the album was quite a banging set. So Hard Islands was born out of me just sort of like coming up with stuff to jam in the live set, really.
Yeah.
Just bangers. Yeah, that was really fun.
How are you finding it like now? Like, because you're still doing gigs and stuff.
Yeah, so, totally.
Like,
yeah.
You've not gone away. Obviously, you had a bit of a break.
Yeah, it was a couple of
before
years.
Before the last album.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, are you still getting that excitement from standing on a stage?
Totally. I still get, like, really nervous before gigs. It's been, like, you know, 15 years or whatever, and I still get, like, still totally shit my pants. Like, it starts, like, the night before. Like, you know, say if I'm, like, travelling the next day, like, no matter how far away it is.
Do you have the fucked up dreams about forgetting something? And you're at the airport, you've like forgotten your laptop or your passport, and you have that panic dream of trying to get it before you miss your flight.
I actually haven't, no.
All right, it's just me. It's just me. This is my life.
I've like, touch wood, I've never ever like forgotten my laptop, and I know people that have. Like, people have.
Wow.
And it would be really easy to do, I think, because there are times where I think, well, I have just thought, well, I've obviously packed my laptop, because. You know, and so I think that's probably how it happens, because you're just like, well, obviously I've packed my laptop, and then you just actually have it.
Yeah. There was me and Pip had used a VST called MS-20 VST,
yeah.
Rather than touring an MS-20.
Yeah.
And it had to have a dongle back then.
Oh, right, yeah.
So it was like a little USB.
Still thing. Have to have like iLocks for some stuff now.
It's so annoying. Yeah. But, so I had one on my keyring. I had one tucked into my flight case under the phone. That was like my super secret spare one.
Oh, right.
So the key ring was the show one. There was one in there, and then Pip had to have one. So I had three keys, all duplicates of each other, just in case.
Yeah.
Because, like, the whole gig, like, every song had that set on it. It was like, why didn't I just use something different that didn't involve that? Oh, it's got to sound like the album, though. It's got to. Yeah. Well, no, it doesn't.
No, that stuff matters in the moment. It does.
Yeah,
I've made loads of those types of decisions where you just want that. You just want to use that thing that's a pain in the ass to use, but
No, I want this.
Yeah.
I'm afraid.
It's fine to do that, yeah.
I did definitely, like, over touring, gravitate towards things I could replace easily.
Yeah.
Like, because I had a Novation base station keys on stage with me for a while. Wow. And it was like, if this breaks, that's like two songs that are going to be a pain in the ass to do.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, if it breaks when I'm in like Dortmund, what am I going to do? You know, so like gravitated away for that sort of touring thing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it was never anything that couldn't be done virtually.
Yeah.
Thankfully. That's why I did a podcast with this guy, Look Mum, No Computer, and he tours a massive modular.
Yeah.
But it's all stuff he's made himself well. So it's not even like he's using... And it's like...
Something breaks. It's...
Well, he's had gigs where something's broken on stage and then he has a little soldering break. Like 10 minutes where he'll repair a panel on stage while just making jokes and just like shrugging a lot. And the people like it. But I think because he's built... He's a YouTuber first, and they know him as a builder of things, and now he makes bangers. It's like some of that audience are kind of there for that anyway, which I think's kind of cute that you can just take a little break in mid-set. Ooh, let me just fix that LFO. One sec, guys. Anyone got an Allen key?
That's good to be streaming it on Twitch while he's doing it.
You could be. You could be. I'm surprised the live gig streaming thing never took off. Like, so many times...
You mean the sort of, like, Boiler Room type thing?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. I think, maybe because Boiler Room sort of completely had that market covered.
True.
No one else did it. And also, it's quite an awkward... I mean, you know, Boiler Room's, like, a cool thing. Like, they've done quite a lot of good stuff. They've helped a lot of people. But, like, especially for artists, I think it's quite an awkward experience, maybe, because it is, like...
Being watched.
Yeah, and sort of... having your back to all the crowd. I know there's other ways to do it, you know, if you want to stream a live
game, yeah. But even if you're facing the crowd, there's something weird that happens when you know you can be seen. Even though standing in front of an audience, you can actually look at that audience and see that half of them aren't looking at you in a weird way. You feel less vulnerable.
Just staring at you.
But like a webcam on you, probably above your head, showing off your bald spot.
I did a gig, I was in Amsterdam as a digital festival, I think it was a couple of years ago, where there was sort of like a webcam sort of on the desk next, sort of in front of me, you know, sort of pointing up at it. It was like a really terrible angle.
Not a great angle.
Right up on my double chin. And then like, also just like, well, you can't really see. I mean, sure, you can see me.
But like, you can see me like
much, it's not a fucking
sweating.
Yeah, it's not much of a spectacle. So they were like, you know, crowd shots, but it was like, just right there, and I couldn't really say. Well, I suppose I could have said, no, I don't want that there, but I was too awkward to say.
Stuff like that, I would usually just put a drink in front of it or whatever, just like, do something. Oh, I didn't know, guys. Sorry.
Nothing to go over while you're like walking out and then just pretend.
Just smash it with the hammer. Like, I always keep a hammer on me.
That's part of your life.
It's the bit where Pip gets the hammer.
It's on the riser. Yeah. We want a 14-pound lump hammer on stage at all times. The touring thing, how is it? Because you're on your own 90% of the time.
Yeah.
You're not someone who really requires a tour manager or anything like that.
I do actually have a tour manager now.
But do
only,
you?
Only since since last year. Yeah, I had him. Been working with him for about a year now. Yeah.
Not how are you finding it?
It's really good.
It's good, isn't it?
Basically, yeah. Like, I just for like sort of more long distance things, it's really good to have someone with you.
Mm.
Because, I mean, I suppose when, if you were touring with Pip, you'd always be...
We're always together.
Yeah. So you've always, even if you've, like, fallen out, at least there's, like, you'll make up and it'll be fine, you know, like...
Well, it's, you go into a country you've never been to before.
Yeah.
You just have, like, something familiar next to you.
Yeah.
Like, Pip was my blankie for a lot of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I know I'm safe because this other person here is still alive. So...
And I'm the kind of person, like, when I'm on tour, I don't, just in everyday life, I don't really like doing stuff on my own. Like, I live on my own, and I love that, but I never, like, some people go to the pub on their own, or, like, go to a cafe on their own, or a restaurant on their own.
Pip goes to the cinema on his own all the time.
That doesn't appeal to me at all. I mean, yeah, I wish it did, because it means I'd probably do more stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, so when I'm on tour, like, say if I'm, like, abroad, in a foreign city, which is an amazingly lucky thing that I, that's what I do for a job. I get flown places. And but I, if I'm on my own, I'm just kind of like feel a bit shy, and I just don't do anything. I just like hang out in the hotel room, which is also nice, but it could be anywhere. But when the first gig I had when I started working with my tour manager, we went to Georgia, to Tbilisi in Georgia.
Mm.
And I had been there before. I mean, the first time I played there was an incredibly flying visit. I literally played, flew in, played, and then flew out again.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's not that far away, but it's hard. There's no direct flights there from London or the UK in general. So it takes like ages to get there. But I went there with him and like, we had an amazing time. Just like walks around Tbilisi.
Mm.
I would have never done that on my own.
Yeah.
Like, it was amazing. Yeah, we like went to this bar at 3 a.m. and met all these people that, you know, it was just like a local bar. But like, all these Georgian guys that spoke English. I was like, wow, everyone speaks English here. That's insane. Like, because we thought, oh, probably going to be a bit weird, but you know, like no one speaks English, but everyone spoke English. Everyone was like super chill and like, yeah, it's mad. I never would have expected that. I mean, it's a really nice city, but like, I suppose it's got that kind of like a bit of, it's got that sort of like ex-Soviet vibe, and it's like, I thought, I don't know whether people are friendly here or not. Or yeah,
obviously, you should make the assumption.
Yeah.
This architecture looks a bit brutalist. I'm wondering if these people are going to be nice.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, I'm sure they're nice, but like...
Oh, look at those angles. That woman scares me.
Yeah.
Tour managers, it must be a weird job.
Yeah, I say.
Because part of your job is just to do somebody else's... get somebody's admin out of the way. Like, book their flights and deal with that crap. But then part of it is, like, you're a tour buddy.
Yeah, totally. I think it's quite, you know, like, the margin of what a tour manager actually does is quite broad. They could organise all the travel, or it is literally just like the artist might just absolutely not want a tour on their own.
Mm.
You know, because if it means they're going to play a much better show if they've got like a mate with them and they're
a couple,
then that's probably worth it.
I did see one DJ many times at festivals. I'm not going to name him, but his tour manager used to just stand next to him while he DJ'd.
Yeah.
And they would chat. And it was like, I got it. I do get it. It's just nice. But it just felt really weird because he wasn't like the most on stage looking tour manager. You know, he didn't look right where he was standing. Like, we're in a rave and there's just, he's almost just like a guy in a bow tie. Basically just on stage, just chilling, doing some texts.
Tour managers sometimes they are like, super industry types, but sometimes they're not at all. Like they don't give a flying fuck about the music. Like my tour manager Ed, like he's like keen, like he's like interested in the sort of like, you know, seeing gigs and that. But like he doesn't. Sometimes people say, oh yeah, so we've booked so and so for next month. He's like, I don't know who that is. You know, like it's fine. I kind of envy him a bit because he could just be that. Well, I don't know what that is because I don't. Not my area, but like
that's the
I have to pretend to know who everyone is. Like, oh yeah, wicked, yeah, you booked him, yeah, cool.
The electronic music scene definitely, because obviously me and Pip floated between scenes, you know, we got booked on rock gigs and all that, but like the weird thing with electronic promoters that some of them want to just prove they're like legit by naming some really obscure thing.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, we've booked so and so for, and it's like, I don't know who that is. Yeah, but you don't want to like shoot them down by going, yeah, no, not a clue, mate. Yeah, sorry, what?
Yeah, totally. You know? Yeah.
Oh yeah, we've booked this obscure guy. He only plays off Locked Groove vinyl through dub delays.
He only plays one Locked Groove record
for 7 hours. But something I suppose like it's no different in indie with like when it was math rock and all that. Yeah, they're math rock. It's like I remember when Foals were a math rock band.
There's that the same thing like, happens with electronic. Like the same music just stays there, like with like sort of club music, sort of house and techno. I feel like there are like new kind of innovations in some with some artists. They'll do something quite visionary with it. But like generally, there's that kind of like middle ground club music, sort of, you know, techno house ish stuff. It's the same thing since, you know, maybe the mid 90s. And it was called like progressive house in the late 90s. And then it became like minimal techno. But, you know, it wasn't fucking minimal techno. We didn't... It was just made by a different bunch of people. Instead of being made by sort of like British kind of like guys in shirts, like it was progressive trance or whatever. It was like German people in Germany or people trying to sound like German stuff. And then that original minimal techno stuff was really, really cool. I used to really like that stuff. And then it sort of got like ironed out into this sort of really like edgeless kind of amelodic or not even just like completely sort of anodyne club music. Mm. And now that's called deep house or something. It's just made by a new generation of people on slightly different gear, but it's like the same fucking music, like exactly the same.
Like, having worked as a vinyl buyer in a HMV, I hated the genres, yeah, man. Tech like house. People would come in and they'd deep be asking house. Like, have you got any like tribal progressive techno?
Like, that's so no, that's so like late 90s.
I know.
Tribal.
And it's that
tribal world. House made by white people in New York.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. Like, very much so. And danced to by white people in New York. But like, yeah, and it's just like, well, now what are you saying? What words are you saying to me? Give me an artist or a record label, and I can get you that. I can help you there, but I don't speak the same language as you.
Yeah, it's all sort of part, I mean, the sort of names of the genres are all sort of part of the aesthetic, aren't they, almost? Like, people like to just sort of...
And I do think that sometimes having, like, whoa, you know, I like disco, not disco. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, having that... thing that separates you is something we do.
Yeah.
Like we have our little in-group, our little kind of cultivated identity. Yeah, I'm a skater, I'm a vegan, I'm a whatever.
Yeah.
But in dance music particularly, it's really niche.
And there's a lot of sort of really needless. One thing I found interesting is like there's the sort of psytrance, which does like
Infected Mushroom or
yeah, it's not a scene I ever been familiar with, but I've played one or two events where they've been basically psytrance festivals.
Mm.
That doesn't really, I mean, I'm sure there are events, but doesn't really seem to exist in Western Europe in a sort of noticeable way.
But like Eastern Europe, it's like massive.
That's what I mean. Like, so I played in Romania,
mm,
a festival there. It was mostly a psytrance, and I played one in Norway as well. Mm. So the lineup was just like, I think those, it was a bit like Glade used to be a sort of psytrance.
Yeah, thing, it used to be like its special little cupboard.
It was mostly psytrance with a couple of like, they'd have like Richie Horton, you know, just a couple of sort of main or like non scene, because it's so scene. So yeah, my point is like, I played a couple of these sort of psytrance festivals. I just didn't have a clue any of the artists were. Mm. They're all sort of, I guess they're sort of local, but also like really scene-y sort of psytrance. But like the people that, you know, ran the festival, like, I'd say, oh yeah, these guys are amazing, and they also like, you know, my music and things that I'd heard, you know, in my sort of sphere that I, you know, oh yeah, I like them as well, you know. But like, and they're like, oh yeah, it's quite sort of intense, you know, psytrance, and they have all like, there's just so many sub-genres, and like hundreds, and then all of it is just sort of, it's just like really straight up, again, that's all middle like ground dance music.
The same.
It's like, well, this is just like,
yeah,
could, you know, that's like not psychedelic in any way or shape.
It's like
the thing that makes it psytrance is that it'll be like a simple beat with no kind of actual music going on, but like a sort of one note bass line. And what they tend to do is like put like really long dialogue samples, you know, like a sampled speech that's like 4 minutes long. It'll just be plonked on top of it, literally just
nothing.
Yeah, there we go. That's
some psytrance now. We've got that.
Press.
Let's make it psytrance. Yeah, have you got that really long Nixon speech?
Yeah, that was something that was really like really common. Like, in all the music I heard at these festivals was just that kind of thing, and with a lot of sort of whooshes and splats, you know, like
there was
needless
this
sort of
weird
decoration
phase that like House went through where it decided that every vocal had to be a girl talking about getting fucked.
Yeah,
and it was just like, it was so creepy.
Like French Kiss sort of vibe.
Yeah, but it was always like...
Something kind of cool about French Kiss, isn't there? That was sort of like a one-off, but yeah, and I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, because, but like French Kiss doesn't kind of go too far in a way.
Yeah.
It does, but you know what I mean? Whereas this is like almost grotesquely explicit, and the amount of those records that were coming through HMV.
Really? Like, I don't think I've heard many of
those. Why? Why are we talking? Like, but it was you knew it was dudes producing those records as well.
Of course, yeah. It's really creepy.
There was never a lady involved in that. You could tell by the way it was written that, like...
It's super creepy. Yeah, like, oh, can you read this out?
Like, yeah, just read this. Like,
it's really great. Oh,
I suppose that weird... Music weird. It is weird that we can, out of those 12 notes, out of that limited... We can make so much.
It's what people choose to do with, like, you know, using music as a platform for, like, getting a girl to sort of read out some sort of really slutty lyrics some guy has written. You know, like, it's like a platform to be, like, a horrible creep or all the other things that music are. So,
but you can also use it to express, like, pain and emotion and all that stuff. It's
a primal thing.
I don't fully understand it. Oh, I'm never going to, but, like, where those emotions come from. How someone, like, there's this song, soul singer Lorraine Ellison, and she wrote a song, well, I don't even know if she wrote it. She sang a song called Stay With Me, and it's tear-jerking, painful song, just beautiful. Duffy, this Liverpudlian singer, covered it.
Yeah.
It's atrocious.
Right.
Yet, there's no difference. Like, the... There's very little difference in the production. It's similar piano and all this. And just Duffy's voice and Lorena's... Like, it's like one is remembering the emotion and one is describing it almost. And it's like, it's really odd how that bit of your soul comes through in this intangible way, through a voice crack or whatever.
Yeah, for sure.
But how do you do that when it comes to electronic music? Because it's the machine.
Yeah. Well, there's an awful lot. I suppose an awful lot of it is supposed, isn't it, really? Because the artist can pour their soul in, you know, like an instrumental piece. But, like, how another person perceives that is, like, completely out of your control.
Yeah, I suppose electronic music has that...
I mean, you can have that with music that has words as well. I mean, no one's going to hear it in exactly the same way as the listener intended it. Well, they might do, but...
But it's very much death of the author. Like, what, as soon as you hit press on that vinyl... It
completely gets completely disembodied from, you know, your... I suppose they're, like, a person and their art are, like, very much, you know, two separate things.
Mm.
And, like, I feel that more now that I've, like... You know, fortunate enough to have a career that's lasted 15 years or 16 years. So hearing that stuff that I released 16 years ago, or even sort of in between bits that, because obviously I remember the really early stuff because it's more of a landmark, but like the sort of in between bits, like, I remember I did that remix, and it's super weird. It's like, I made that, and it's sort of, I can't really connect with it anymore. You know, it's like, it's so weird how your work is so separate from you. Because, I mean, yeah, it's a combination of things like, you know, it's a recording of sound that you made on equipment, so it's not 100% like you. It's you doing stuff with some instruments that already existed, you know. So it's just interesting to hear, like, what I did with that back then and how it's like, I don't really relate to it now.
Mm.
But, yeah, so, I mean, people might hear things in instrumental music that's completely of their own fabrication because it is just... Noughts and ones.
And I suppose it is like a context thing in your, the way you hear it, when you hear it, that where you are. When, like, if we heard, I don't know, Firestarter for the first time in this kitchen right now, it's something different to...
Yeah, I have, like, really nostalgic connections with, you know, a lot of music, and I realise that it's not the music itself that's like, oh, it's just, I associate it with a time.
Yeah.
You know, like, when I was a teenager, or, you know, you just sort of, it puts you in that place, but that's not, you know, the band or the artist that made that wasn't putting that in there when they wrote the song. Yeah, you know, it's just something that my own brain is connected with it. So you have, like, zero control over how people, you know, just consume it.
I always just wish Keith had normal hair. The amount of times I had to look at people having his Firestarter hair.
You look at the old Prodigy where he just sort of had, like, when he just kind of had long hair.
Floppy blonde.
Yeah. Well, like, I remember when, I think it was like Poison. Or no, it was like the music Music for the Generation
yeah.
back cover had like photos of them on the back. I bet actually all their albums had pictures of them on the back, didn't they? I remember Project Experience. They're like,
I always thought that was kind of nice because it was yeah. like, oh, it's more than that.
Yeah, I remember like I thought yeah, when I was like a kid and I bought that album, I was like, oh, that's what they look like, cool. Yeah, because yeah. you didn't get that with like dance music. It was like this sort of completely faceless noise.
Yeah, it was always like some fractal shape on the the cover. In Dayglow colours.
Yeah, Keith just had like, he had like sort of long floppy kind of brown. Hair. It was just,
but then he undying. Then he had his Keith Flint haircut, and yeah, then I had to around. Look at it. People kept walking past me with that hair, and it's like, you're not Keith Flint, mate.
Yeah.
You're not. Don't copy Keith.
Cringe.
He's the fire starter. That's yeah. it's very risky. he might take his revenge on you by starting a fire. Unless you need him to start a fire. Like, he doesn't say it in the song, but he's actually like, he just pops around people's houses when they're having trouble with their barbecue or whatever. He did it for years after that. He was just like, do you need a fire? Yeah, all right, I'll help you.
He's got a sack of fire lighters with him.
Yeah, yeah. He's like, well, can I have one of the burgers, though? Yeah, yeah, get in, Keith. Have some salad with it, though.
Yeah. God rest his soul.
Yeah, that messed me up that day that...
yeah, horrible.
Because I was driving up to the north
mm-hmm.
To do a podcast with a guy called Syriac.
Oh, right. Crazy. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like his artwork, yeah.
But I was like...
Mad gifts.
He was one that I had no clue of, no real understanding of who he was as a person.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Like, because it's mostly his work and he's in his work. But
really, yeah.
And yeah, I just like literally just before I left the house, like I heard the news, and then it just made me like, that's all I thought about for the whole journey. It was like a good 4-hour drive, and it's
yeah, it was really shocking.
And you have that weird like you're doing that oh, silly, you have that kind of trying to not emotionally engage with it
yeah.
thing, but when you're just driving up a motorway.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to shut it out, but...
Bounce around your head.
What it made me think about was all the fun that I'd had because of his existence.
Yeah.
Like silly stuff. I never knew the man. I never met him. I've got the same accountant as him. so we're associated.
Almost.
We've probably stood in the same building at separate times. So we were close.
Both from Essex.
Both from Essex. Yeah, I was born in Braintree. We were best mates. Okay. No, but like, I had no connection to him other than through, not even through his music, through this group of people's music.
Yeah.
But it made me think about like me and my cousin Sharon dancing in a kitchen to Firestarter when we were like 20 or whatever.
Yeah.
And taking a lot of coffees. A lot of those coffees, the strong coffees, the feel-good coffees. But, like, you know, just, it was weird how they weren't a band that I was ever, like, buy the T-shirt for, yet threaded through, like, loads of occasions in my life. I have, like, really vividly good memories associated to them.
Yeah.
And it was actually kind of nice, because I think maybe other people have that with... Like big pop bands as such.
Yeah.
You know, like it's going to be people who have Ed Sheeran marking yeah. points in their life right now. And it was just nice that like my markers were them and Massive Attack.
Yeah, same. Like I said, you know, I was literally like a kid and I was like buying their albums and stuff. I suppose like from that whole kind of like 90s sort of breakbeat rave scene, they were like the only ones that sort of like became a household name, you know, world fame. Yeah, they are like, they're massive, like they're like huge.
We used to go to a night at the Bullseye. I think we just called it the Bullseye. I don't actually know what the night was called, but it was just the Bullseye.
Where was that in Essex?
Basildon, okay. Essex. And our mate Stu, there was always a bit where you'd get a bit of Chemical Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You might get Underworld Born Slippy in there. You might get Josh Wink, High State of Consciousness. Nice. But this was like an indie night for the main.
Yeah.
And
there so that's how Radio 1 was at the time. It was like basically, indie, but then some dance, some stuff like that. Born Slippy was like the sort of token dance track amongst the indie stuff, wasn't it?
But then you get The Prodigy.
Yeah.
And that would be the bit where the metalers would suddenly, oh, I'm getting back on the dance floor now. Yeah. You know, it'd be like weird.
Well, like, Come to Daddy by Aphex Twin. That's like one. The one that like I remember I was at college in Reading, like quite a few people on the course like, oh yeah, I don't really like electronic music, but I like Aphex Twin, meaning they like Come to Daddy. I was like, oh yeah, what, do you like Selected Ambient Works too? They're like, no, I like Come to Daddy. I was like, oh, okay. Of course you like that.
It's so weird though, like that, like how one band can be, oh, or that one thing.
Yeah.
I, do you know what? I was that guy when I was a kid. I used to like Iron Maiden, but I didn't like Iron Maiden. I liked the t-shirts. I really liked Iron Maiden t-shirts. I did not like Iron Maiden's music.
I mean, as far as Iron Maiden are concerned, that's the same as liking...
For them, yeah. When I was 12, you rarely found me out of an Iron Maiden t-shirt or my WWF. Before it was WWE, Undertaker t-shirt. I liked And Undertaker was the one for me, you know? He was the one.
If it's a good t-shirt, you've got to wear it.
You got to.
As long as it doesn't have like a swastika or UKIP on it or something, then you got to wear it.
Same thing, innit? Hey, fucking UKIP, Nigel, you know it. BP.
Yeah.
The BP. It's a mess, man. Is that, like, you have no clue how that's going to affect you for touring and stuff?
Yeah, it's going to affect people negatively who do this line of work, yeah.
It's going to be paperwork.
If it happens, which, you know, we've always got that to hang on to, but it's probably not going to happen.
It's like, let's have another delay after then.
I feel like we'll probably be in this sort of limbo situation for quite a long time, which... kind of sucks, but at least it means we're still in the EU while that's going on. We won't just stay in the EU, but we are leaving, but you know, not yet. And might be in that.
I can't remember which book it is, but they are currently taking odds on when we rejoin if we do leave. You know, and obviously it's still, it would be like 20 years or whatever, but it's just interesting because bookies know stuff. That's their job, to predict the future, essentially. And I'm not saying they're right, but I just find it interesting that it's like, this is, if you are 20 years old today, the next 30 years of your life are just going to be talking about Brexit.
Yeah, totally.
That's fucking crazy.
Most people that voted for Brexit are going to be dead by the time that happens. So like...
me and my dad got a bit heated with the other day. About it the other day, and he was doing his, oh, Boris is going to get it done. And I did, just, I'd got to the point where I was just, I'm tired.
Is he pro-Brexit, is he?
Well, after the referendum, he said he voted Remain, but he lied.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, he's been he's on Facebook a lot more. The last year or so, he's got Facebook on his phone, and he's definitely swinging. But I did say, well, what does it matter to you? You're going to be dead anyway. And I felt really bad, but I was like, I needed to say that. Sorry, Dad. And if this is the one you first choose to listen to, Dad, yes, no, you're going to be dead.
I think quite a lot of people that did vote for Brexit did it because they don't like foreigners. But all these people live in places where there are no foreigners. They live in, villages in rural England.
Where Farage ran in that election around that time, where he was trying to become an MP, is Thanet, which is Margate, basically. Yeah, which has one
central.
Of... but has one of the lowest ratios of British people to immigrants.
Yeah.
And it's like, wait, what? The bit of you're trying to get in the bit that's least affected by all the bullshit you're talking about.
Yeah, it's just the idea of it all, isn't it? People just don't like the idea of foreign people. Yeah. It's just like horribly depressing.
Like, I've still not found someone who like voted for Brexit fully understanding it.
I don't know a single person that voted leave.
Yeah.
But that just goes to show about the whole
thing. I'm Essex, you know? Mate. I'm Essex. Like,
Norfolk's a funny one because we're in Norwich. Now, Norwich itself is really liberal. I think 80% of Norwich voted Remain.
Yeah.
But it's kind of quite fractal because the rest of Norfolk and just England.
Yeah,
it was
outside metropolitan centres.
Yeah, so England, like probably most of London, probably voted Remain. Not everyone, some people voted. So urban centres, people generally. That's generally how it goes. Like, so more liberal people tend to live in cities, and
but like
not because my parents, for example, they've born and grown up in rural Norfolk. You know, lived in rural Norfolk their whole lives. Both voted Remain.
I live down the Oxford Road in Reading, so I'm surrounded by different people of different cultures.
Yeah.
Not just skin colour, like white ones that clearly aren't English. But yeah. But I, you know what I mean? Like, I know that me being around all these different people means that it's far easier for me to see myself in them.
Yeah.
You know, like, okay, this guy, yeah, he's got a different, he's wearing a strange hat on his head. Oh, but I see him enough times, it's like, oh, it's Dave. You know, sort of Barry. All right, Barry. Yeah, we got to. Yeah. It's
Barry, oh, nice. Barry from Moldova.
Barry from Moldova, really. But you know what I mean? It's like, I just think that we are all just humans. Like, there's no, I genuinely don't think we're that different. Like, everyone just wants to, like, what, eat and fuck. Maybe sleep. Like, at the ultimate, that's pretty much
what. And listen to music. Because, like, what I've seen from going,
they have to.
What I've seen from, like, playing, people sort of sometimes ask me, like, oh, you know, where's, like, the best place to play? Like, what's the best, where's the best crowd? And it's like, there kind of is, they're all the same.
Mm.
Like, obviously, cultures are different.
London is shit, though, right? London and Paris are both amazing. Shit.
I think every country or city has its amazing bits and shit bits. But what I mean is, like, you know, because, oh, you know, what country has, like, the best crowd? And it's like, yeah, like, people are different in different cultures and countries and linguistically and stuff. But, like, the way people react to music is just that one human to another human, there's, like, no difference. People are just people. You know, someone from, like, you know, Africa talk to someone from, like, Canada, and they're just two humans having a conversation, providing they can speak the same language. But, like, you know, so I find that people just react to me, and maybe it's because my music is instrumental, or the club environment is generally the same sort of vibe wherever you go.
Yeah.
But that's the sign of how it is. Just doesn't matter, you know.
This thing as well, like, you go, okay, so my news agent is Indian, and he watches loads of Indian TV in the shop, and there's a pop program he watches.
Yeah.
And what fascinates me is how similar Indian pop is to American pop. Like,
I think it's globally, it's all quite similar stuff, isn't it?
But, like, this is not marketed outside in India. It's very specific. So it doesn't have to try to sell itself. It's just that there are some core things that are generally popular in terms of tempo and feel. Now, obviously, there's still some like, vocal style in there and some instrument choices that make it feel Indian to us.
Yeah.
But it's the core of that basic ingredients the same. And now, obviously traditional music is going to be very different to traditional German music or whatever.
Yeah.
But we've kind of gravitated towards, we've perfected something.
Yeah.
You know, and everywhere in the world are going to dig that same thing.
I always find it quite interesting, like, Mr. Traveling around Europe, like, it's obviously, you know, you have, like, big pop stars and stuff, but then obviously you get pop stars that are massive just in their home country, sort of thing, because that might be for, like, language reasons, maybe, or it's just, you know, but, like, I think it's interesting sometimes you see how some, like, for instance, like, Italy will have, like, really huge pop stars within Italy that probably sing in Italian. You know, therefore, they're not really going to sell out. So, I mean, they're going to sell nothing, but they're not going to be huge.
But then
you get the thing where people, like, a lot of it is in English as well. Like, I've been in, like, Russia or something like that, and there'll be, like, some pop music on the radio that's all in English, but you can tell it's not an English song. You know?
One thing, there was a song by a German MC called Peter Fox, and I think it was called It wasn't Uber Alice, because that's that Uber thing. But it was something, overall, or something along those lines.
Sorry to interrupt, Dan, in post, but it's Alice New by Peter Fox. Anyway, I'll let you carry on listening.
And then it's the strings part, drum pattern, vocal pattern of Plan B's Ill Manners.
Oh yeah, same song. Happens quite a lot, doesn't it?
So, like, almost identical, like slight shifts. And what I wonder with stuff like that is, that's in German, that's in English. Like, there's probably a songwriter somewhere there who's sold it to that guy, and then
it's like a My Lovely Horse scenario.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. It must happen like all the time.
Yeah, but like, because, well, it's in German, so we're never going to hear it over here. And
yeah.
Yet the snobbish bit of me is like, well, that one came out first. The German one's better because it's the one that came out first. It's like, how is that? How is that a thing? Like, I understand the Plan B one. Was it Plan B? It wasn't it?
I don't know it. Yeah, I don't know that one. I know that I think the reason why I mentioned Italy, because I remember there's like someone showed me, it's like an Italian pop song, but it's just Creep by Radio. it's like in Italian and sort of badly, you know, quite. It's a bit like that. Have you seen that sort of Speak the Hungarian Rapper thing that's a bit like, do you know what I mean?
No.
Where it's like Stop the War, where it's kind of like, is this like, you know, serious Hungarian pop?
Yeah.
It's in English, but it's like Hungarian rap thing.
Mm.
It's all white, you know, like sort of four white Hungarian guys doing this rap song. And it is the, you know, the Biggie Smalls tribute, like,
oh,
with the Police sample.
Every Breath You Take.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's a rip-off. It's like a General MIDI version of that, which is a sample in the first place. And just this, like, really sort of empty, like, pathetic sort of anti, like, really sort of, like, disingenuous or anti-war thing. It's like clearly just sort of trying to cash in.
Hip-hop fascinates me. Like how samples get reused and handed round, and like there are certain beats that it's accepted if you use it and somebody else uses it, they have not stolen from you because it's like that good. The sample is that good that everyone should be allowed to put it on their mixtape.
Sort of thing. Break, yeah.
We, wow, so many people. Yeah. It but it's odd that, because like in pop music, as soon as like three notes are the same, people are very, you stole that from me.
Yeah.
Me and Pip had it with like a Sugar Babes song.
Oh, really?
That there's a melody in there that's a bit like Beat That My Heart Skipped, right? And I think because they sing it like, it's the bon bon bit that I sing. And they sing non-words at that point.
Yeah.
But I didn't care. Pip didn't care. It wasn't like, I didn't think in my head, oh, they heard that and stole it from
there's
us.
There's no way you can prove, like, it could be a coincidence.
Yeah, it could there's easily
no way
be.
You can prove that it isn't.
But the internet, like literally tens of people going, they stole it. Like, I'm like, atting them and atting the label, you thieves. And I'm just like, what? This just, there's 12 notes and you can't play all them at the same time, so just chill. It's the Sugar Babes anyway.
If you notice something like that and now you've got the internet, you can just go online and rant about it.
I don't think any of the good Sugar Babes were left at that point as well, so why would I care? If it had been Mucha, I'd have been in there.
Yeah,
they've reformed anyway. Nice. Before I go on a long rant about the Sugar Babes.
It's like a weird thing where, you know, it could be a coincidence and you can't really prove that it isn't. There's I think it's Pearl Jam. There's a recent Pearl Jam song. I think it's Pearl
Jam. Do they have recent songs? I lost track of them in 1999.
I mean, someone played it to me and it's like really, I mean, it's the chorus of this Pearl Jam song.
Mm.
If it is them, I can't remember who it is. Exactly the same as my track Grandfathered.
Oh, okay.
It's just like the same chord, I think the same drum beat, the same tempo. It's got Eddie Vedder singing over it.
Yeah.
But then the verse is something different, but it's the just like the same beat.
No way.
Like exactly the same chords. Like, and it's not the most like novel chord sequence and drum beat.
But still, it's the combination of the two.
Yeah.
So you chose that chord sequence and then chose that drum beat.
Yeah.
Maybe they stole it.
I know. I mean, I really don't care if they did, because that's amazing if they did.
I
think that's just the incredible power jam of like, oh, this Nathan Fake, we might nick one of these.
I'm going to spend the next 10 years building this podcast to a level where I can get Eddie Vedder on. I'm going to sit him down. We're going to have 45 minutes of delightful chat. And then I just want to play you something. And I'm going to A-B it.
Yeah.
Thieves! And then walk away.
It's a different snare.
Walk away.
We made that snare ourselves.
Pearl Jam played like in Southend, which is like one town over from me, at a venue called the Esplanade. And if you meet someone my age from Essex and say to them, did you see Pearl Jam at the Esplanade? 50% of them will say yes.
Yeah.
It's a 200 cap venue. There is no way there were 20,000 people in there. But I do not know someone who doesn't claim to have been there I want it to be that.
It would be amazing.
Oh, yeah, I won at the gig. But, yeah, they stole my mate Nathan's chord structure. So, fuck you.
Yeah.
So, what are you working on at the moment? We might as well get a little sort of ish plug in. Kind of.
I just finished working on an album, which is...
So, you went 5 years, nothing, then album, and then EP.
Yeah, it was... Yeah, before Providence, there were so Steam Days was the last album before Providence, and then yeah, that was 2012, I think.
Yeah.
And then yeah, I did like an EP or two. I did an EP in between Steam Days and Providence.
Was that the Cambria Instruments?
Yeah, yeah.
Like this, your label.
Yeah, so I did like a split with my friend Wesley, who I founded the label with, and then I did a solo EP. They were in 2014 maybe. So yeah, and then 2017 Providence. Yeah.
Mm.
And then
Providence remixes.
Yeah, there's a few remixes, and then there's a Sunday EP that came out
like a year later
after, yeah.
And now another album.
Yeah. So I'm really happy with it. I think it's finished. Yeah, I haven't got a name for it yet, but I've been working on it for the last year or so.
Yeah.
It's basically ready to go. But yeah. Yeah.
What, are you following the path you kind of set yourself on with Providence? That more...
It's quite different to Providence, I think.
Yeah?
It's like Providence was sort of, I very purposefully made an album that didn't have any sort of dance music on it. Even though you can dance to it.
Yeah.
Because it's all rhythmic and, you know...
Mate, there's people on TikTok right now dancing to angry voicemails from their exes. Fucking hilarious, but harrowing. Yeah. Carry on.
But like, that was sort of quite like consciously not a sort of club music record. Whereas I think with this album, the new one, I didn't really have much of a sort of brief for it, but it's turned out into the sort of, it's kind of like my ideal version of like, a rave, basically. It's like, that's the music I want to hear.
So, shoegaze.
shoegaze days are long here. I still listen to My Bloody Valentine now and then. But, no, it's like, it's sort of quite dreamy, fuzzy techno, really. It's nothing, not a huge departure from what I've done in the past. But, like, I think it's like, it sort of feels like a bit like I'm in magnum opus at the moment, because it's quite an epic album.
Yeah.
It's quite sort of widescreen. And I mean, Providence was pretty widescreen, but Providence is very sort of sharp and clean, I think, for the most part. And this one's a bit more fuzzy and
yeah,
a bit more kind of like blurred or something. I don't know. It's like kind of like MDMA sort of rave vibe.
Yeah. But like, it's got to be nice to A, still be doing it, and like people actually want you to be doing it.
I know, yeah.
You know.
It's amazing.
But it sounds like you still feel like you're feeling out the space as such. Like there's this area that is Nathan Fake, and you're still wandering around in it, going,
sort of, it's always
no way. In, yeah. Right, this fuzzy stuff as well. Okay.
It's always in flux, I think, because the world is, I think when you're younger, it's easier to stay in step with the world, like with stuff like music and trends and stuff. You know, I think you do. I think people generally, unless they make a real like hard effort to stay in touch with trends, people generally care less about stuff like that as they get older. So now I'm like in my mid-30s, I'm still young, but like it's not the same as when I was 20. I felt completely plugged into stuff. There's still a lot of stuff I didn't know, but like
I think we faked it when we didn't know then, though. I think maybe we're more willing now to just say, I don't fucking know what
yeah,
that
so
is.
Maybe that's the difference. Yeah, yeah. But like you know, now I think like I still very much sort of do my own thing. Yeah, like I am just sort of feeling out my own space, as you said. But like I think about 5 years ago I would have been like, yeah, I don't care what's happening in the rest of the world of music or whatever. But now I'm like, I think it's really good to keep an ear to the ground. Like I do really enjoy, I'm not like totally on the pulse, but like I do enjoy sort of keeping an eye on what goes on in the world of music. And yeah, it's interesting how not a lot has changed in the last it's just the aesthetic changes, I think, more than the music itself, and like the way it's, well, you know, produced and consumed. Obviously, you know, there's an added sort of I think social media has added so much stuff, you know, whether it's good or bad.
I think the thing with social media for me is that I get overwhelmed by the amount of stuff.
Yeah.
So obviously you did Providence on Ninja.
Yeah.
And I want to keep up with Ninja. They're a label that are important to me.
Yeah.
They're a label that means something to me. And like the Entone stuff from way back when, the like proper left field Ninja stuff.
Yeah.
Even their website, the old Entone website, I was a fan of.
Yeah.
I think if you look at highres.net, the company's website now, there's probably an archive of the Entone website. But like, it's just meaningful to me. And then that led me to Big Dada, and that led me to, to all of hip-hop, in a way. Yeah. And, I want to keep up, but I haven't got time. Maybe I have got time, but maybe it's just because I fell in love with them, but then I've picked up other things to love along the way. And now, at this moment in time, if I open Twitter, there's going to be 10 people telling me about their new album that I've got to listen to. And
it's just exponentially, more people. I mean, even a label like Ninja that would just keep growing, you know. Mm. So they're going to get to a point where they're releasing so much stuff that you just can't keep.
They're releasing a dub pedal.
Oh, yeah.
And I've still not got around to watching the trailer for that. That looks, it's going to be great. Cold Cut designed it with Erica Synths. They're both names I respect.
Wow.
I'm excited. But have I watched the little 1.5 minute trailer that sat there just waiting for me to watch it? I even saved it to watch later.
I've done that so many times, you just don't get around to checking something out.
It's got big knobs on it, I know that much. I think it's got a valve in the middle. It's one of those ones. Big knobs, valve. Yeah. I'm excited, but I still haven't watched it yet. I don't know. Yeah, it's hard. It definitely is hard to keep up.
Very much changed how, I mean, I think the sort of the turnaround is a lot quicker with music and everything these days, you know, like the sort of consumer rate.
I've made the active decision to get back into actually making music and releasing and trying, not trying to earn a living with it, but I mean, trying to be the artist and the sack as such, rather than just some guy who knocks out records here and there. I want to maybe try to build towards getting back to doing live stuff.
Cool.
But I know that there's a long road ahead of me to get there. But yeah, that whole release schedule thing, I'm actually kind of excited about it, because it's forcing me to write differently. Like, write a little quicker and dirtier.
Yeah.
You know, it's a lot of taking snapshots of ideas, there's a synth line, just grabbing that audio and putting that in a folder and I've got that. Rather than what used to happen, is where I'd spend 4 days on one thing.
Yeah.
Just letting things happen and then coming back to it at the end of a week or a month and going, that into that into that. Like Lego building it all together I'm enjoying it. And it's quick. You know, making music, it's sometimes nice to make a 10-minute song in 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it's just really nice.
Make it all completely in real time.
Oh, wow. How cool is that? That's why I'm jealous of guitarists.
Yeah, you just record
Jose Gonzalez, he can write an album in 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Or you can at least record it in that one.
Yeah, totally.
Is there anything you need to plug? Yeah, we didn't. I didn't even do the "Who are you" at the start. Who are you? Don't tell him. I'll introduce you at the start.
I've
just buy my records.
Yeah, I just did a gig in London, so I can't plug that. That's all gone. So keep an eye out.
You're just home for Christmas.
I will at some point in the coming few months be announcing a record, I suppose.
And we'll be doing some things in the future.
Yeah.
As long as we don't cease to exist or something. That would really suck. Yeah, I'm definitely going to be doing stuff in the future.
Yeah.
Boop. We all vanish.
I'll be announcing a record at some point. So yeah.
You sound so happy about it. and then I'm going to have to tour again. And that's very tiring. I love it, don't get me wrong, but fuck, you know. I just never got enough pants. Tour laundry. We could talk about that for hours. I'm hanging up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, well, I hope you enjoyed that. Me and Nathan have really similar kind of similar experiences of the music industry, yet completely different, which I quite like. Feel like I learned some stuff and things and... Weirdly, something that I don't think came up in the pod, but maybe me and him talked about afterwards, was there's a couple of tracks on Dan and Pip Records that you would never think inspired by Nathan, but were me trying to work it out, but doing it badly. Like, so if you go back to Rapper's Battle, there's actually bits of that that are me trying to work out what Nathan does, but not actually being able to. But then finding something I like. So it's kind of nice where inspiration comes from for me personally. You know, copying people. No, not copying. Homage. Homage. I think sometimes I do that when I'm producing things, but I end up making like a caricature, which is fine. At least I'm making something. And again, thank you, Patreons. Thank you, people who use the Bandcamp. Thank you, people who review. All that stuff means a huge amount. I know I say it every week, but it is really important. Like, trying to do this DIY existence, I need to highlight the fact that I see you when you do things that help me continue this DIY existence, you know? Next week's guest isn't recorded yet, as ever. I always leave them real late. I'm going to get ahead again. When we started, I was like weeks ahead, but that slipped a long time ago. But next week's guest, I'm actually going to record it more than a week in advance this time, because I recorded this on Friday and it's out on Tuesday, this one just gone. So, I'll get better, I promise. Stop hassling me, Mum. Oh, yeah, I'll clean my room in a minute. Yes, I'll do the washing up. Oh, God. Yeah, I know if I leave the Yorkshire pudding pan like that, it'll set. Oh, I'm actually having flashbacks now to my youth, earning my fiver a week by doing the washing up every night and washing a car. In the summer, add the mowing the lawn to that. It's kind of not slave labour as such, but very, very underpaid labour, my household growing up. And once again, meandered off topic, so I'll just leave, shall I? I'll just hang up, and you can get the advert at the end from Acast. And then you can go on Twitter and hit retweet on my post about this podcast, because that makes other people know about it. Have a lovely week, and I'll see you on the next episode.